before we begin, let's cultivate our motivation and really have a very big mind that extends throughout the universe and remembers all the living beings throughout the universe, each of them having their own individual experience right now, but all of them wanting happiness and not suffering just like us. And so, although it may seem like we're just one person and we can't do much to benefit them, in actual fact, as we progress spiritually, our abilities to benefit others increases dramatically. And so, with that intention to be of the greatest benefit to living beings, let's have a firm determination to purify our mind and develop our good qualities. In other words, to become fully awakened, so that we can do that. So it's a short poem, 37 verses, but each one is jam-packed. So we're on verse 29 now, okay? So in the earlier verses, Tomei Zambo, the author, yeah, it was Tomei Zambo, talked about, you know, our precious human life, about dedicating ourselves to the Dharma, taking refuge in the Buddha, you know, remembering that our life is short and, you know, preparing, the importance of preparing for future lives. And then he also talked, there's a whole section about the thought training verses, about what to do when we encounter all sorts of unpleasant experiences, like people talking about your bad qualities throughout the 3,000 worlds. Yeah, I love that one, you know, because somebody talks about my bad qualities to one person and I flip out, and then I think, well, that's nothing. It could be the 3,000 worlds. You know? At least it wasn't that. Yeah. So, and then the text proceeds from there into a whole section on the six far-reaching practices, often called the six perfections, which are the chief bodhisattva practices. So in the past, we've talked about generosity, ethical conduct, fortitude, joyous effort, and today we're on the fifth one, meditative stability. And then next month will be the sixth one, wisdom. Okay, so let me read the verse, and then we can talk about it a little bit. Okay, so the verse reads, understanding that disturbing emotions are destroyed by insight and with serenity, cultivate concentration which surpasses the four formless absorptions. This is the practice of bodhisattvas. So there's some technical terms in here I need to talk about so you understand it. Okay, so understanding that disturbing emotions are destroyed okay, by insight with serenity. So disturbing emotions refer to the mental afflictions, principally ignorance, anger, and clinging attachment, but also go on to arrogance, jealousy, laziness, lack of personal integrity, inconsideration for others, wrong views, you know, there's lots of them. Okay, I think they said 84,000. Yeah, we don't usually get the whole list of 84,000. I would like to find a sutra that contains that list. I wonder how big it is. Okay, so, but these are all disturbing emotions and wrong views that keep us bound in the cycle of existence. Yeah? And so we want to eliminate them. Yeah, because when we eliminate them, then they stop, we stop doing the actions motivated by them, and that stops the rebirth in cyclic existence. Okay, so what the actual thing that eliminates the afflictions is wisdom. Yeah, and we cultivate this wisdom through unifying serenity and insight. Okay, so that's why it says, yeah, understanding that disturbing emotions are destroyed by insight with serenity. Okay, so serenity is the ability to concentrate, to put our mind on a virtuous object as long as we wish to have it there without getting distracted either by some kind of excitement arising in the mind or by some kind of laxity and obscuration clouding the mind. Yeah. So that serenity is the actual topic of today, but I want to explain the whole verse first. Okay, so you have that concentration, but that has to be conjoined with insight. And here, insight is an analytical mind that is able, and it refers specifically to insight into emptiness, the ultimate nature of reality. Okay? So we need to develop that kind of analytical wisdom that directly sees the nature of reality, or that as we, when we start out, it knows the nature of reality, it doesn't directly see it. That's why we need to combine it with concentration, with serenity, because serenity has the power that gives insight the ability to really cut the root of ignorance. Okay, so they often, you know, they give an analogy when they talk about the three higher trainings, ethical conduct, concentration, and wisdom. That standing firmly is like ethical conduct. You know, at the beginning of our practice, we have to be firm. Okay, knowing where exactly, if you're going to hit, chop down a tree, knowing where exactly to hit the tree, that's insight. You know exactly. You know, in the analogy, what is reality? And having the power to swing the axe and get it at that point is concentration. Okay? So all three of those are needed. If we just have an understanding of the nature of reality, but we lack concentration, then our mind cannot stay on that object very long. And without that, then we can't really integrate the meaning of the emptiness of inherent existence into our very being, because our mind will be all over the place. Okay? So we need the insight together with this serene mind that can concentrate. And then it says, cultivate concentration which surpasses the four formless absorptions. This is the practice of bodhisattvas. Okay, so the four formless absorptions. So here we need a little bit of cosmology according to the Buddhist view. Okay, so it's not going to be with the sun and the earth and, you know, scientific cosmology. Here, when they talk about the realms of living beings, okay, and a realm isn't necessarily a place. It's more a type of body and mind that different living beings take due to their karma. We usually talk about three realms, okay? The desire realm, the material or form realm, and the immaterial or formless realm. Guess which one we're in? The desire realm. Okay, the desire realm has beings like us that are overwhelmed by attachment and desire and clinging, especially to external objects. Okay, and that's really our trip, isn't it? From morning to night, we're looking outside of ourselves for something that's going to make us happy. Yeah. If I only had this kind of car, if I only ate that kind of food, if I only have a relationship with this kind of person, we're always looking outward for something to make us happy. So our mind is always filled with desire for something that we don't have. And even if we have that thing, then we really cling on to it with strong desire and don't want to separate. And then we get angry if we lose it, if it gets destroyed, if someone else takes it away from us. So that's kind of our dilemma in the desire realm. And there's all sorts of sub-realms within the desire realm. Okay. Then above that is the form or material realm. And these are beings who have been born there by the force of when they were human beings, or other beings in the desire realm, generating serenity and even deeper states of concentration than serenity. So these beings are called the material realm because they have a more subtle body. They don't have kind of a gross body like this. So they don't have the same kind of diseases we have. Wouldn't that be nice? And they're born there because as human beings, they spent time really engaging in the practice to develop serenity and concentration. Okay. And there's four of those formless, four of the form or material realms. Okay, and clearly they have deep concentration and deep, deep bliss, deep equanimity by virtue of that concentration. But they aren't the ones who are the most concentrated, okay? Above the beings in the four form realms are the beings in the four formless realms. They're called formless because they don't even have this kind of subtler body than we do. Yeah, according to the Sutrayana, they don't have a body, they just have a mind. And they are totally 100% focused on their object of meditation, okay? And so from the time, again, they're born there because of having developed these deep states of concentration as a human being. But once they're born there, they are just in their meditative absorption. Okay? Now, although these beings, like the beings in the form realm, experience very deep, kind of satisfaction and equanimity and pleasure, there's a disadvantage to being born there, which is that you're still under the control of afflictions and polluted karma. If you're an ordinary being and you just attain these states of concentration, you haven't eliminated the root of cyclic existence, which is ignorance. Yeah, that's what insight does. That's what wisdom does. But these beings haven't generated that wisdom. So they are born in these realms of deep concentration for a long period of time due to their karma. But when the karma runs out, when the karma runs out, then what happens is some other karma in their mind ripens, which is usually a karma from the desire realm. And then they go from these states of great blissful concentration, kerplunk, down into our realm with all these distractions. And, you know, instead of having just this peaceful mind that's free of desire and anger, now their mind, you know, the seeds of attachment and anger, you know, rise up in them, and they're generating all these afflictive emotions. Okay? So one of my teachers, a Tibetan teacher, when he went to the Eiffel Tower in France, you know, he was born in Tibet. He didn't know anything about Europe for many, many years. But he was a very great teacher, so his disciples brought him to France to teach. And he went to the top of the Eiffel Tower, and he said, this is like being born in, you know, the peak of samsara, in these formless realms. Yeah, the only place to go from here is down. Yeah. This particular teacher, if I can have a diversion for a minute, he also, like most Tibetans, he couldn't figure out why Westerners ate salad. He called it rabbit food. Yeah, in Tibet, I don't think they ever even saw any lettuce, you know, too high up. Anyway, okay, so in this verse, when it talks about developing concentration beyond the four formless absorptions, okay, you can't really get much higher in cyclic existence than the four formless absorptions. That's the top. Okay, so when the verse says beyond them, what it's meaning is the concentration that can focus single-pointedly on the emptiness of inherent existence. You know, because that is beyond, because that will lead us out of cyclic existence. Okay, is that clear for people? Okay. So, we want to develop the serenity, but we need to always, you know, have in mind that it's for the purpose of developing insight and wisdom. Because they say that when you develop these deep state of concentration, it is so blissful that if you don't have a strong intention to be free of cyclic existence, you know, which will lead you to generate wisdom, it's very easy to just say, wow, these states of concentration are super. Liberation couldn't be better than this. And you just stay in those states. It's very easy to have attachment to those states of concentration. So it's for that reason that our teachers at the beginning of our Dharma practice don't put great emphasis on teaching us to develop single-pointed concentration. First, they want us to have a more realistic attitude of our situation in cyclic existence, in samsara, so that we have some wish to be free of it. Yeah, because if they taught us serenity and concentration at the beginning, we might very well cultivate that, get born in the form or formless realm, and then go kerplunk when that karma finished. So that's why they want us to have, you know, at least the some determination to be free from cyclic existence, and even better is bodhicitta, the altruistic intention to become a Buddha for the benefit of all beings. Okay? So the development of concentration in the Buddhist path is within that context, you know, because the practice of developing serenity and concentration is not an exclusively Buddhist practice. Yeah, it's done in many other traditions. Yeah, I don't know, I know in Christianity they have some concentration practices. I don't know how deep they go, I've never really explored them. But definitely in Hinduism, you know, some of these wandering yogis spend a lot of time in concentration practice. They get reborn in the form and formless realms, but they're still within cyclic existence. So we don't want to do that, because they say that actually, since we've had beginningless previous rebirths, we've already been there and done that. I find this somehow both consoling and alarming. You know, consoling to know that at one time, yes, I did have single-pointed concentration, so it is possible. But alarming that, you know, I didn't have any renunciation or bodhicitta, so I got born again in the desire realm. Okay? So that's why we always want to have the Buddhist worldview. You know, that's why I think cultivating a Buddhist worldview is so important to really practice correctly, because then we know where all these practices belong and what we need as a prerequisite to doing them. Okay? So the practice of serenity, is... we usually do our Labor Day retreat on this, okay? And so it's taught in both the Pali tradition and the Sanskrit tradition. And each one of them talks about five hindrances or faults that we have to overcome, except they have different lists of the five. But anyway, we have so many faults and hindrances, it doesn't matter. We just have to overcome them all, that's it. Okay? And then the instructions teach us how to overcome these obstacles to serenity. So let me talk first about the ones in the Pali tradition. Yeah? So the first one is sensual desire. Okay? So you may have noticed that one when you sit down to meditate, maybe when you in the previous hour when you watched your breath or tried to do some visualization, did your mind get distracted to objects of desire, objects of attachment? Yeah. Did anybody stay on your object to meditation the whole time? How about for more than 3 minutes? Yeah, if you do it more than 3 minutes, that's actually pretty good. Yeah, but most of us, you know, the mind just goes off. And it usually, not always, but usually to something, we want to think about something pleasant. We go to some kind of daydream. Okay? So we think about lunch. You think about your boyfriend or girlfriend. You think about this movie you want to see. You think about, kind of what you want to buy. You think about the new car. You think about, you know, how you want to make more money so you can go on vacation to really nice places. Yeah. So always the mind thinking about how, you know, the desire realm. How can I get something I desire? Okay. So that's one of the hindrances. The second hindrance is ill will or malice, okay? So that's the opposite. That's, you know, I'm fed up, I can't stand this, Why don't these people leave me alone? Why does this always happen to me? Why don't they do blah, 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 blah? This is the why don't mind. Yeah? Or to put it in another way, the they should mind. Okay. In other words, the mind that's angry and upset because things should be different than they are. Okay. So this is also a big hindrance, isn't it, to our meditation practice. Yeah. How many of you go more towards the desiring good objects as distractions? Yeah. How many of you go more towards the anger? Yeah, kind of split. Some people raise their hand twice. We go towards all of them, don't we? Yeah. Okay. The third one is the mind of sleepiness and drowsiness and dullness, is better to put it. So drowsiness, you're kind of, well, you know what drowsiness is. Dullness, the mind is just, it doesn't feel like thinking about anything or doing anything. You know? It's just you try and do something useful with your mind, but it just won't work properly. Yeah? And then after a while, you know, from the dullness you go to the drowsiness, from the drowsiness you go to sleep. Okay, so this is also a hindrance to developing single-pointedness. It may seem we're really single-pointed when we sleep, but actually, that's not the case. Okay, single-pointed, no. Okay, so we need a bright, alert mind, not that kind of dull mind. Then the fourth one is restlessness and regret. Yeah?
Remorse
and regret. Well, that's restlessness and regret. Remorse means regret. Okay. So restlessness could be this, just restless. You're bored, you're looking for something. Restlessness also flows into anxiety. Yeah? I think nowadays restlessness, I think anxiety is, what do you think is more prominent in people's minds? Anxiety or just restless feeling?
They definitely do go together.
They go together, don't they? Yeah, because the anxious mind is restless. It's, well, what about this, and what about this, and what if this, and what about that? Oh, there's this and that. You know, they definitely go together. It's not a quiet mind that's conducive to developing concentration, is it? The anxious mind is all over the map. Yeah, can't stay anywhere. Just, yeah. Okay, then... Yeah. And then we also have regret or remorse. So regret or remorse, that's an interesting one to think about. Because if we regret our non-virtues, that type of regret is virtuous. If we regret our virtuous actions, that type of regret or remorse is non-virtuous. Okay? So here I think it primarily means the non-virtuous one, you know, where we're thinking, oh, I should have done that, you know, I should have done what I didn't do, or I shouldn't have done what I did do. Okay? So the mind that goes in the past, oh, why did I do that? That was so stupid. Oh, why didn't I do that? That could have been beneficial. And we spend a lot of time in that kind of remorse or regret, don't we? Yeah? Do you find in your life that you spend some time in that? And the older you get, the more things you have to regret? Yeah? This is why it's very important to do purification practice, because when we do purification practice, we learn how to process these things from the past. Yeah, see them correctly and then put them down. Yeah, and then they stop serving as distractions for us. This one could also be the virtuous kind of regret, because sometimes if we regret our non-virtue, yeah, while that's good to do when you're trying to develop concentration, it becomes a distraction. Yeah. So again, that's a good reason for, you know, doing purification practice, you know, beforehand. Yeah. Regretting our virtuous activities is especially damaging because we had accumulated good karma, and then when we regret them, we destroy that good karma. Yeah, so we become our own worst enemy. It's kind of like, you know, you give a donation to a charity, and then afterwards you think, oh, why did I give them so much? I could have given less. Yeah? Or you do something kind for one of your friends, help them move, or, you know, do some favor for your friend, and then afterwards you think, that took up the whole day. You know, why did I need to do that? Yeah. So, you know, this kind of regret of virtuous actions is really very detrimental. We have to be, you know, quite aware of it, otherwise we destroy our merit. Okay. Then the fifth of the distractions is doubt. Okay, so this kind of doubt, you know, isn't the doubt inclined towards the right conclusion. It's the doubt inclined towards the wrong conclusion. Okay, but can I really develop concentration? Does the method that they told me to practice actually work? I bet everybody else can do it, but I can't. Look at all those people around in the meditation hall. They're all in samadhi. It's only me that can't sit still. You know, this kind of doubt. Yeah, so that becomes an obstacle too for our concentration. So the way to overcome them, yeah, for, you know, desire for sense objects, it's very helpful to reflect on impermanence and how things are transient, because when we reflect that things are momentary and changing all the time, then we come to see that there's nothing really there to get attached to start with. Yeah, because even if we get what we want, it's not going to last for a long time. So what's the use of fussing so much, you know, and making such obsessing with, you know, having to get this, that, or the other thing? Why not just let my mind be content with what I have? Yeah, that was one of Lama Yeshe's big slogans. Good enough, dear. What you have is good enough. But no, Lama, I need to a new car, I need a new computer, I need this, I want that. Good enough. So, you know, learning to have a content mind. And a content mind is a real blessing, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I know our society encourages us, actively encourages us, to be discontent. Isn't that what advertising is about? Yeah. Advertising used to be just letting you know that if you needed something, where you can get it. Now advertising is actively trying to make us need something that we don't need, or make us want something that we don't need. Why? Because it's good for business. It's good for the economy. Yeah. And when we're not aware, we look at all these advertisements and we think, well, yeah, it would be really nice to have that. That would be a little bit more convenient than what I already have. And what I want isn't a luxury item. It's something practical. This is the real hook, isn't it? It's something practical that will make things easier. It's not a luxury item. Yeah. So I really should get it, you know? Yeah. Then other people can use it too. So I'm doing it out of compassion for others. Okay? So, you know, learning to catch that mind that likes to follow the advertisements and that creates a tremendous sense of dissatisfaction in us. You know, so much dissatisfaction that it's hard to have mental peace. I remember one of my nieces, even when she was like 6, 7 years old, she said to me, "How can you wear the same clothes every day?" You know, the idea of wearing the same clothes every day was unfathomable to her. It would have brought her so much suffering. She was 6 or 7. Yeah. So kids learned very quickly, you know, and the advertising industry is geared towards them. Yeah, so... yeah, we have to be very careful about our relationship with the media. Yeah, very careful. Okay, but meditating on impermanence really helps to subdue that. Because whatever I get, first of all, it's not going to make me everlastingly happy. I mean, come on. Yeah. And second of all, it's not going to last long. So, you know, let's just calm down a little. Okay. Then the second one, you know, ill will or malice, the way to subdue that is by meditating on love or compassion or fortitude. Okay, so in the meditation on love, well, first we might start by thinking of the kindness of others. And when we remember that kindness, it becomes easier to generate love for them. Okay, so love being the wish for them to have happiness and its causes. And we spread this not just towards the people that we, you know, our friends and family, because, you know, developing love towards the people we're attached to is not the way to get rid of anger. We have to develop love towards the people we're angry at. Yeah. We have to develop the wish for the people we despise to be happy. Okay. And this isn't some kind of Pollyanna exercise of, you know, oh yes, may they all be happy. You know, it's not that, but it's really going beneath and seeing, you know, really looking at the people that we have difficulties with, that we can't stand, yeah, and seeing that they're just trying to be happy and not have suffering. And they're tremendously confused about the way to go about this. Yeah. You know, even these ISIS people, you know? You think they're trying to be mean? They're trying to be happy. Yeah, they're going about it the totally wrong way. Yeah. And depending which party you root for in Congress, the other one also is trying to be happy and, you know, just doing their best, not trying to be harmful, but also confused. Yeah. So in this way, when we can look at people that way, it helps us to be much more tolerant of them. Yeah, they're just trying to be happy, not suffer, and they're confused about how to go about that. Wouldn't it be nice if they had happiness and its causes? So when that's what love is, wishing them happiness and its causes. So that doesn't mean that we say, may ISIS have all the missiles they want to that will bring them happiness. You know, because that's not going to bring them happiness. Yeah, they may think it will, but it's not. What's going to bring them happiness? Having a peaceful mind. You know, what will bring them happiness? Having some self-respect. Being able to put their energy in a positive direction where they can see that they can contribute to the welfare of others. Yeah. What will bring them happiness? Having some talents that they can, you know, really employ and feel some satisfaction for. So when we're wishing them happiness, you know, we're wishing them the happiness that comes through internal cultivation, principally. Yeah, because that happiness is more stable. Okay? So the happiness that is free of anger, that's what we're wishing them. Okay? And if you think about the people you can't stand, yeah, if they were happy, if they were peaceful inside, they wouldn't be doing the things that you can't stand. So actually, we should, more than anybody else, wish those people to be happy. Yeah, we usually think, no, I'm only going to wish happiness for the people that I like. Yeah. But that really, you know, doesn't do so much. Wishing happiness for the people we don't like, that does a lot. Yeah, for them and for us. Yeah. Okay, then the third one, the dullness and drowsiness. Yeah, so there it's very good before you sit down for meditation, you know, put some cold water on your face. Make sure the room you're meditating in is not too warm. So don't bundle yourself up in lots of blankets and make yourself toasty, because that will make you drowsy. Okay? It's good to do if you can do prostrations and some purification beforehand. That's also very good, getting the body moving. In your break times, take walks, look at long distances. The sky is much clearer now. You can look in the distance and stretch your mind. So that's very good for eliminating dullness and drowsiness. Yeah. Also, visualizing light is very useful. So if you're doing the breathing meditation, let's say when you exhale, yeah, imagine that you exhale the dull, drowsy mind in the form of smoke, which then disappears. And when you inhale, imagine inhaling light, which then fills your body and mind. Yeah? And that lightens the mind, too. It helps to eliminate the drowsiness. Okay, there's some other techniques, too, as you get more into this. Okay, then for anxiety, you know, restlessness and remorse or regret, anxiety, what I find very helpful for that is just to say, you know, chill out, children, you can't control everything. Yeah, because I think anxiety is rooted to the mind that wants to control, but it can't. And so we're anxious, you know, I want this to happen, I want that not to happen, but But I don't have control over all the causes and conditions that will make this happen and that not happen. So somehow accepting the situation as it is, if there's something to do, do it. If there's not something to do, relax. Yeah? My mother used to say, stop hitting your head against the wall. Very practical advice, actually. You know, because who's going to win when you hit your head against the wall? Not your head. Yeah, the wall. So, you know, if you can't do something about it, accept the situation. And, you know, and then within accepting it, see that there are a lot of things that you can do to improve the situation. Because I think that restlessness and worry and anxiety create all sorts of fantasies about if such and such happens or if such and such doesn't happen, all the horrific things that are going to happen. Yeah? Do you find that your anxiety does that? You know? Just watch sometime when you're really anxious. What is your mind telling you? Yeah. Oh, if I don't give this talk perfectly, everybody's going to hate me and never speak to me again for the rest of my life. They did a survey once, and more people were afraid of public speaking than afraid of death. Isn't that amazing? Yeah? So, you know, and that's because the mind is making up stories. Oh, if I don't get this job by next Tuesday, I'm going to be a bag lady, you know, in the middle of Spokane. Really? Yeah. So you watch about, how, you know, how the mind exaggerates things, you know, and just say, you know, really stop and say, how likely is that to happen, you know? And then we really, you know, then the anxiety goes way down, you know? It isn't likely to happen. If it does happen, there's things I can do. The world really isn't going to end. Okay. And if I have a cheerful mind, I'll do better at dealing with the situation anyway. Okay. And then with doubt, the way to remedy that is, you know, through study, if you have, you know, really viable questions, finding the answers to your questions. Or if your doubt is this kind of cynical doubt for the sake of having doubt, you know, a kind of cynical, sarcastic doubt, then the best thing to do is just ignore it and realize that it's the mind trying to stir up a mess when there's no mess there. Okay? And, you know, going back to your breath is really good when the doubt starts. Just come back to what I know is and stop all this kind of skepticism. And then two mental factors that are very important in developing serenity. One is mindfulness, and the other is introspective awareness. Mindfulness knows what your object of meditation is and keeps the mind focused on it without letting it get distracted to other things. And introspective awareness is the mind that kind of checks up every so often when you're meditating. And it observes, am I on my object of meditation or have I gone off it? If I'm on it, stay. The mindfulness is there. If I've gone off it, let's renew my mindfulness, bring my mindfulness and my attention and my concentration back to the object I'm meditating. Okay, so that's a very brief description of serenity. That may be something to get you going. So a few minutes for questions or comments. Yeah.
My mind goes to the place of I haven't done enough. Whether it's for somebody or I'm reading something, oh, I need to read more on that. There's always just never enough. I'm imagining that fits into that last category a little bit, maybe not. But can you talk to that?
Okay, that's kind of the restlessness, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, instead of rejoicing at what you are doing, your mind is, I should do more.
It's a desire to do, yeah.
Yeah.
It's,
but it's not just clean desire. There's kind of, because are you wanting to do more because you really enjoy that? Or are you shooting your mind? Yourself.
I do a little of both.
You know? A little of both, okay.
And sometimes it's just so interesting. I think, oh, I want more.
Yeah.
And
okay. So if it's really interesting and you want to learn more, there's the future. You learn more.
Yeah.
Slowly, slowly. Okay. There's no way to speed it up.
It's hard to pick. I get drawn. But I get drawn to a lot of things.
Okay.
And they're all calling. Yeah. What should I do?
Then it's a thing of developing some contentment. I choose one. I do that. I'm content with that. Then when there's more time, I go to another one. Yeah. So maybe kind of disciplining your mind a little bit, you know, kind of. It's kind of like a little kid at. Yeah, the candy store wants to put all the candy in their mouth at one time. You know, and it's just reminding you of one piece at a time. Yeah.
I wonder if you could speak a little bit more to that analogy of the ethical conduct, insight, and concentration of the tree and the axe.
Yeah.
I really like that, and then at the same time, I'm struggling with the last piece. Because it almost seems like concentration lends itself towards insight.
Mm.
And what I seem to struggle with is maybe like there's a moment of insight. Like, I can get something and there seems to be evidence for it. Like, say, attachment causes, you know, suffering. I mean, it makes total sense in the moment, but I don't change my behavior. Or I don't have the power to cut the root of the ignorance.
Yeah.
It's like the insight just sort of. And so I'm trying to get, okay, I realize I don't have the power, but I don't feel like I get how to go from insight to action or
okay.
How concentration.
Yeah, in that kind of example you gave where you have like an insight, let's say, into some bad habit you have that you really want to change or some way of thinking that is just not serving you, yeah, and it's like you got it, and then somehow, yeah, you got it, but now it's in the back seat and the force of habit is going on. So that's a very good example of why we need the concentration, okay? But the way to do that is to, you know, whatever, the way that you were meditating before that helped you get to that point of like, seeing the uselessness of attachment or seeing the benefit of, you know, developing love for all beings. You know, that way of meditating is laid out. There's a whole sequence of points that you contemplate to get there. If you repeat that sequence of points that leads to that conclusion again and again and again, that will help strengthen your understanding. That doesn't mean that every time you think of that sequence of points, you're going to go, aha, I've got it. Yeah. Because the thing is, you have to do it many times without the aha experience before you get the aha. Then, the more you do it after that, then the deeper, you know, even if you're not having aha all the time, still, you're going through that and it's seeping into your mind in a deeper way, okay? The aha is kind of like when you put water on something and it gets wet immediately, you know, the seeping into your mind is maybe like when you put oil on something and it gradually soaks in. Yeah, so you need that gradual soaking in over time of repeating the meditation again and again, you know? And then just also being patient with yourself. Instead of, you know, we have the aha feeling, instead of going, oh, why did it go away? How come I'm doing this again? I'm so stupid. Which doesn't help at all and actually distracts us more. To say, wow, that became really clear. Now I know it's possible to have that kind of clarity. That's really good. I know it's possible. But it's going to take more time for it to become a steady clarity. So I'm going to put in the time and effort necessary to make that something steady. Okay?
Taking back on that, just to, say something to the fact of along the lines of like integrating the meditation or concentration experience, say, in sitting into living, and that kind of disconnect of it.
Yeah.
There, and then the distraction maybe of not cultivating that throughout.
Yeah, well, that's one thing that can be very helpful to do is if you're working on a certain meditation or a certain topic in your meditation, to then throughout the day train your mind to think about that topic and see everything in terms of that topic. Okay, so for example, if we use that example of like having this feeling of, yeah, you know, all these things I'm attached to, that attachment is just really ridiculous. You know, it just brings me suffering. Yeah. Then, and you feel that, you know, on the cushion, then when you get up, yeah, keep that in mind. Yeah. When you sit down to have breakfast and the mind says, I want blueberry pancakes with whipped cream, you know, and then say, well, you know, I can also be happy without that. Yeah, remember what I thought about attachment? That it's just, you know, it doesn't bring any ultimate satisfaction. And I know that. Yeah, and I know if I have the blueberry pancakes with whipped cream, I'm going to feel sick afterwards. So let's just save myself the trouble. Yeah, so you kind of apply it during the day, yeah? Then maybe you go to work and maybe you see somebody else who's really stuck on an object of desire. You know, in the break, in your break time at work, somebody's going, I want this, where I'm gonna go shopping and get this, that, and the other thing. And then you're not criticizing that person, but you stop and you think, wow, their mind is really obsessed with that. And look how unpeaceful their mind is. You know, this is an example for me of how my mind gets obsessed with its objects of desire and how unpeaceful it is. And just like that person's suffering now, so am I, you know, so do I. So you bring your understanding into what you see and experience during the day. That makes some sense to you? Yeah? And, you know, and this is very good because, you know, all the time we're always looking at things and projecting our own interpretations onto them and criticizing and judging people. When you have a particular meditation topic that you're working on from the stages of the path, and you apply that to what you see around you, then there's no space for the critical, judgmental mind. Because you're thinking in terms of the Dharma, and what you see other people do, you know, is just an example of the truth of the Dharma. It's not something for you to criticize.
Could you call that
Yeah. Yeah. There's some good positive discernment there. Yeah. You know, you're driving on the highway and you see one guy cut another guy off, and the one who got cut off is blasting their horn and races ahead, and you know, and you go, wow, look at the disadvantages of anger. Yeah? Do I ever get like that? Yeah? I better, you know, do something, because that guy is going to cause a car accident, you know? And I don't want to do that, you know, with my anger. Or, you know, whatever the thing is.
Yeah. I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to maybe the differences between calm and serenity and laziness. Because I think our society really has this, you know, the dumb person that doesn't say much and doesn't have a lot going on versus serenity, and maybe if there's some way to identify the differences there.
Okay, good question, yeah. So, with laziness... the mind is usually, you're talking about the laziness of just sitting around doing nothing. Yeah, that kind of laziness. So there, the mind is very dull. With serenity, with concentration, the mind is very awake, very alert, and wants to go on a virtuous topic. So they're actually quite different, you know. And in general, just having a peaceful, calm mind throughout the day is, again, different from laziness. Because having a peaceful, calm mind, you're very present with the people you're with. And your wisdom can operate. Yeah, with laziness, you know, the wisdom's out to lunch. Isn't it? Oh, yeah, that's a big one. So physical pain, yeah, it can, one technique, there's many techniques. One is the taking and giving meditation. You may have remembered that from a preceding. That's very good for physical pain and for emotional pain. Another thing for physical pain is sometimes to step back and just observe the pain. And it can be very interesting to try mentally to draw a line around where the pain is. Yeah. Where exactly is that pain? And try and draw a line around. And, you know, it keeps changing where it is. Quite interesting to observe. And then that kind of leads you sometimes to, well, what is pain anyway? And then that leads you to, what is the difference between an unpleasant physical sensation and my mind reacting to that, saying, I can't stand this, this has to stop. So how much of this is actual physical pain, and how much of it is my mind rejecting the reality of the situation? Yeah. And then in terms of emotional pain, usually behind emotional pain there's some story or another that we're making up about we don't like this, we don't like that. So look at the story, press the stop button on it. Realize how the story isn't true. I just realized we've gone over time, so we have to stop right now. Yeah. So let's dedicate. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May the born have no decline, but increase forever.